Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For over 50 years, the New York-based Ballet Hispanico Contemporary Ballet Company has provided opportunity for Black and Brown Latinx dancers, aspiring dancers, and emerging choreographers in a way that intersects artistic excellence and advocacy. Founded by Tina Ramirez in 1970, the company has grown to become one of the largest Latinx cultural organizations in the country. Today, it hosts a dance company, a company school, a choreographers institute, and community partnerships all around the city of New York. It's now led by Eduardo Villaro, a former dancer in the company who went on to develop and choreograph for Chicago's Luna Negra Dance Company before returning as artistic director and CEO in 2009. The company comes to Tulsa tomorrow evening as a part of their 50th anniversary tour. Of course, the 50th anniversary is actually in 2020, but due to COVID, that anniversary has been elongated. And they'll present three works headlined by Anabel Lopez Ochoa's Tiburones, a cultural response to West Side Story's depiction of the Sharks, the Puerto Rican street gang, along with a 1970s era work by the company, Arabesque, and 18 plus 1 by Gustavo Ramirez Sansano, a flashy piece featuring the music of Perez Prado. Here's an excerpt. That's the music of Perez Prado, which will accompany 18 plus 1, one of three ballets to be performed Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock by Ballet Hispanico. The event takes place at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus. Eduardo Villaro, the artistic director and CEO of Ballet Hispanico, is my guest today. Eduardo Villaro, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on with you, Rich. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I was going to say congratulations on 50 years of Ballet Hispanico, but actually, I guess it was 50 years in 2020 when everything shut down.
That's right. Our 50th anniversary was when the shutdown happened. And so we really had to find ways of celebrating. But, you know, we've just extended it. Like, it's a, you know, once you're 50, you can have a birthday for 2 years. Why not?
Now, your company and the company that you've grown up with and now have returned to be the artistic director and CEO of is, you know, I think a lot of times when you hear Ballet Hispanico, people might think of it as a folkloric company, but it is not folkloric at all. It's a contemporary ballet company performing works by what will be familiar names to Tulsans like Nacho Duato, Anabel Lopez Ochoa, and other contemporary choreographers. Tell us about the focus of the company.
Yeah, exactly what you said, Rich. I thank you for that. I think the focus is how we bring together all these artists from the Latinx community and showcase their value, their art, and also what they've given to our artistic landscape. So, you know, Nacho Duato is one of those masters, and we do one of his works. But we also have been very much about bringing leadership forward. So Anabel was part of an all-Latina program where we brought three Latina choreographers together to create work and then tour it. We want to make sure that the conversation that we've been having during the pandemic about featuring new voices, we are one of those spaces where you can come see all those voices.
And one of the big components of Ballet Hispanico has been the nurturing of young talent. You have a very active school. You have a choreographic institute for young aspiring choreographers and emerging choreographers. In fact, I guess in a way, before maybe some of those processes were in place, you benefited from that self because you were homegrown talent. How did you come to the company originally?
I came to the company. I auditioned. Actually, I didn't audition. I came to take a class. I was still in school at Adelphi University in a dance program, and I was kind of like putting my feelers out. Where do I want to dance? And I came and took a class, and there and then after class, the artistic director, Tina Ramirez, who also is our founder, asked if I was available for work. And I said, no, I have to finish my degree. And she said, who's your director there? And she got on the phone with the director and figured it out so that I would be taking class at night while I started my professional career. So it was really one of those moments, you know, that you hear that you have to grab the opportunity in the arts because you don't know when it's going to happen again.
And was Tina Ramirez, I mean, was that part of the core of the mission from the very beginning to nurture young talent?
Yes.
And mentor?
Yes. Ballet Hispanico was a grassroots organization. Tina wanted to give voice and also capacity to young Latina and Latino kids from the neighborhood. You have to remember, in the 1970s, New York was a different place. It was burning. Everyone moved to the suburbs. The city was in disarray a little bit. So her and people like amazing visionaries, Dancing of Harlem, Alvin Ailey himself, started creating these works for our community who was left in these dire situations. And so she developed a school program. So our backbone is education. And these young people became professional dancers right in front of her eyes, dancing in street fairs and carnivals. And little by little, a company was born.
Obviously, you benefited from that. Was she a great mentor during your dancing career?
She was. She was. She really taught me how to be a professional. And one thing she was very good at is that she knew what your strengths were. And immediately when I, you know, a month into it, she's like, you're a good teacher. We're going to get you to do some programs. And I started a program for the organization for kids living in temporary housing, homeless kids. And, you know, that has been my passion ever since, to bring dance to everyone anywhere. And so she really passed that down to me. And in retrospective, as I look back and I was like, why would they give me the artistic directorship? It's because of that. It is that connection to Tina, that connection to accessibility and make the arts access with, at the same time, beautiful quality work. We're just not serving the community. We're also creating innovative, gorgeous works of art.
Now you're following in the founder's footsteps. Those are very large shoes to fill. Of course, she probably trained you to be able to do that. You had your own company in Chicago where you were a very active choreographer. Are you still active in choreographing work for the company today, or is running the organization take more time than you're able to get in the studio and work with dancers?
Well, the past few 2 years in the pandemic, actually the pandemic gave me the opportunity to go back, and I created a work for a performance we had online. And, you know, that's the problem with the art form. Once it tickles you again, then you're done. So it's funny you should ask that. I'm now thinking of creating a new work, and I haven't done so in 4 years. So except for that small snippet. But, you know, yes. Most of my time, you know, when you're an artistic director, you're directing artistically, but I'm also the CEO of the organization. And so my artistic vision is about producing and programming and developing spaces for young people and for artists to really have agency to create their work. So it has taken a lot of time away from me, but I think that's kind of turning the corner right now. So more on that later.
Well, tell us about the tour program you're coming to Tulsa with. This will be the first of your, I guess, winter and spring tour. And this is, I guess, an extension of your 50th anniversary work.
It is. We're bringing a an evening we're titling Noche de Oro, which means an evening of gold. And we're starting with Anthony Prada, who was a Venezuelan choreographer back in the late 60s and 70s and 80s. And he was one of the few Latino choreographers working at that time, besides the well-known Nacho Duato, and that was a contemporary world. So we're bringing that work back. It's called Arabesque. And it really isn't about the line Arabesque, but actually that idea, that Moorish influence in Spain with flamenco and a fusion of a neoclassical style. And then we take a little break and we go on into Tiburones, or the Sharks, which is last year, actually, no, now it's 2 years ago, Annabelle Lopez Ochoa and I were sitting down having a meal, and I turned to her and said, what do you think of all this rehashing of West Side Story? And she's like, I know, it's a problem. And I said, yes, it's a problem. Here it's, and I'll tell you why it's a problem for me. Because I have, like a lot of Latinx people, a love-hate relationship with West Side Story. And so she's like, well, why don't we make something ourselves? And I was like, absolutely. So this is in response, not so much of the movie, but in response to the whole idea of who gets to tell whose story. It's a really fun work, and I know the audience is going to love it. And then we close with Gustavo Ramirez Sanzano's 18 plus 1. And he created this in celebration of his 19 years as a choreographer. It is all Perez Prado music, kind of space age lounge, Latin meets contemporary athletic fast movement. It's quite an uproar.
Well, Perez Prado music is so just so engaging and brings you in, you know, it's just like, it's just speaks of red velvet and just lushness, I think. That sounds like
exactly,
a wonderful piece.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about the three pieces. Arabesque was created in the 1970s. Does it have a 70s look to it, or is it very much a contemporary dance piece that includes, again, these flamenco elements with neoclassical? And I have a hard time sort of picturing that, because when I think of neoclassical, I think of things like Balanchine and the like. And I don't see how flamenco and neoclassicism works together, but obviously it does.
Yeah, I mean, you know, neoclassicism is a reference to classicism. So just like Balanchine was fusing a lot of different types of movement, and he worked with other choreographers, and that's coming into light even more so. Mm-hmm. And he was considering other forms. That's the whole thing about this work. It is a fusion of the classical line meets the flamenco torso and flourish that you have in the arms. So it is really beautiful. I mean, I had to update it a little bit. I mean, I don't think we should be performing in leg warmers anymore unless we really mean it. So we might have changed a few lines in the silhouette to make it a more contemporary silhouette, but the choreography is the exact same.
Earlier, you said you were going to explain your love-hate relationship with West Side Story, and you alluded to it, and I get a big part of it. You know, it's Lenny Bernstein, and I forget who did the book, but it's, you know, it's your traditional Broadway team, knows very little of the Latin community, of even the 1950s. There's a lot of stereotypes. Can you maybe elaborate on that love-hate relationship with West Side Story that sort of informs Tiburones?
Let me preface by saying that I could sing every single song in West Side Story. I choreographed it when I was in high school, for goodness sake. So there was some pride in me understanding that I was giving voice to a Latino experience. So that was really wonderful. And the music is incredible. And the story is remarkable. And the choreography was, you know, such a revelation and such innovation in that. I mean, have fun with the whole gang dance fighting. That's a lot of fun. But still, it was so interesting and so ahead of the curve, because later on, you know, what came out in the 80s and 90s was dance fighting, was hip hop, was battling, was voguing. So, you know, they weren't so far off. the problem lies in the way, you know, when you're looking at a culture from a certain lens, then you can't give authenticity to it. And so my problem is that in those authentic moments that needed a little bit more input from someone from that. And so with these new rehashings with Spielberg, I mean, we just said Nacho Duato, Annabelle, there are choreographers out there that are Latinx. I was wondering, why didn't they choose for these new remakes to work with someone like that? So we went back to the same model. And so there's where I had the love hate. It's like, I think we could do better light up by that. You know, musical theater is not about authenticity. It's about magic and it is about story. It's really not about authenticity, right?
Right.
But at least when you're representing someone that you give a little, just a little bit, not a little bit, give that culture the right to fix the icon. Because for years after West Side Story, you know, derogatory terms were used for my community. There were things that folks, you know, take for granted. And so we wanted to do something that played with who's looking at us now. And so the work is really, Tiburones, Annabelle's work, is really about the gaze of media and how media really takes something and or a creator takes it and tries to manipulate it and remove it from its authentic space.
Give us a sense in the ballet of a moment that sort of helps us reimagine that relationship between dancer and material.
So in it, we have our own mambo, and it is a mambo with the movement, and that's a true mambo. It's actually a Perez Prado mambo. So that gives you an authenticity that they would have been using at that time, not, you know, Bernstein's music, right? Bernstein had to figure out what are the chords and what is this, and this is what that sounds like, but this sound is an authentic sound for authentic movement. So there's one. I can't tell you more because there's some twists and turns. There's also a little gender bending that's fun there. Mm-hmm. You know, what roles are given to who. So it's a lot of fun, though. It's done really in a lot of fun and in a really space to allow for a different perspective.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned mambo. You know, really having played mambos, West Side Story mambo is really quite faster than most mambos go.
Exactly.
So you really can't dance it's a mambo really to it. Well, that's really interesting. My guest today is Eduardo Villaro, artistic director and CEO of Ballet Hispanico, a New York-based Latinx dance company, which is celebrating its extended 50th anniversary with a tour, and they'll be presented by Corgus Productions Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock at the Lorton Performance Center at the University of Tulsa. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. He started out as a dancer in Ballet Hispanico, worked with the company for quite a bit of years, and then left to go to Chicago to continue his education and run his own company there, Luna Negra Dance Theater, before coming back to be the artistic director and CEO. I'm really excited by the fact that you're starting to do choreographic work again, because when I was looking over Luna Negra, it appeared to be your work was part of the main backbone of that company there.
Yes. You know, it's such love in creating a company and a work. I mean, it really blossomed, that company. And I was in my space of creating work, of getting work by a Latino choreographer out there, of really breaking those glass ceilings. And I was able to develop a platform in the Midwest for Latinx artists. So I'm very, very excited that I could keep doing this in even a larger platform that is Ballet Hispanico.
Tell me a little bit about the company's choreographic institute. What level choreographers are you working with? Are they just emerging, or they have already got work to their name, and it's just about helping them take the next step so they can move, you know, a body of work that they can show to work with other companies, or what exactly?
Thank you for asking that. You know, the Instituto is now almost 8 years old, and it is growing little by little bit because we are all constantly, I'm very curious about how someone gets chosen to work in other. It's not only talent also, but there is networking and who they're presented in front of. There are, as in every space and every field, there are certain tastemakers that you have to run through. And so who are they? How are they in conversation with us? It's usually the Instituto is 2 weeks of work. It is non-product based. It is process based. A choreographer, an emerging choreographer, gets to work with a company of some of the best, and I say this with, you know, with all passion, some of the best dancers in New York City are right here at Ballet Hispanico, and you will see that. And so they get to work. So we give them the space, time, and energy, which is what choreography is all about, to just be themselves and just find ways. Then we give them support, marketing support, understanding how to put a development plan together. We do these little kind of workshops on mentorship. They receive a mentor they work with. And at the same time, we have a film aspect to it. We bring a young filmmaker in because I also know that there's we need to fill that hole of people who really understand and film dance. And so we're trying to develop filmmakers that understand dance. And they also get a mentor in order to support their, we work with Nell Shelby, who is a well-known dance videographer here in New York City. And so it's about support, it's about mentorship, it's about agency, and it's done really, really well. And I'm very excited we've created some works from there, and I look forward to more.
Yeah. Now you say it's process oriented more than product oriented, but I guess it sounds like you are getting product out of the Instituto.
Well, they come in, they start a process. It looks interesting. The ones that have gone on have really, it's worked out very simple. That was lovely. We'd love for you to, I'm going to commission something from you, but not that. Here's where we're going to go. Either we have a conversation. What are you interested in? Or what are you doing? Because sometimes it's okay to go from that place. If it's fabulous, we will. But sometimes, you know, the choreographer needs to get in a space of, I am being commissioned now. What does that mean? And every dance company has its own values and vision. And so they have to understand how they work with companies. It's not only just their vision, it's how their vision also melds with the company's vision. So that's something that is really important for me to help teach these young choreographers.
I'm glad you brought up the film aspect, because so many companies nowadays, it's less about, you know, physically going to festivals or, you know, say some of the big New York festivals where you can see four or five companies all presenting work over the course of a week or two festival. It's mainly they're viewing videos of the work. They're viewing films. How important is that to choreographer being able to get their work seen by the people who might engage them?
Well, you bring up a very good point, which is this whole virtual world that's opened up since the pandemic. But before that, I think it's very important for us to document these works for any choreographer so that we know. You know, one of the things I lament is that our beautiful country is a little bit behind on understanding how important an art form like dance is. And so that's why we're here to shout that from the top. And, you know, choreographers, unless you're in a dance family, you know, they're not home names. You don't know a choreographer. And so if we put them on film more, the more our world gets to understand, our nation gets to understand, these are artists that are really creating important work for us. And so any chance that a choreographer gets to put their work up in that medium, I think it's very important.
And you know, what's interesting is when you have a choreographer that sort of transcends just ballet or a dance theater. It's all of a sudden that influence shows up in every sort of media. Even a person who might never ever step foot in a dance performance will see that choreographer's influence on a commercial, on a Super Bowl halftime, whatever. It shows up right all across our media landscape.
Yes, and I think that we're seeing more and more of it, and the choreographers recognize. I mean, I just saw something for Kate Spade, a commercial, these ladies dancing with fashion, and, there's more. The fashion industry is using choreographers. The music industry, it used to be the choreographer was quiet unless you're Beyonce's choreographer, but now, when someone comes in, they make sure that that name is brought forth. And I think that is such a huge shift and such an important shift.
My guest today is Eduardo Villaro, artistic director and CEO of the Ballet Hispanico, which will be presenting a program as part of their extended 50th anniversary Wednesday evening at 7 at the Lorton Performance Center at the University of Tulsa. Before I let you leave, I know later this year, Ballet Hispanico will premiere your first commissioned evening-length work, and it will feature, again, this choreographer we know from her work with Tulsa Ballet, Annabelle Lopez Ochoa, and it's a retelling of the Evita story, Doña Perón. Tell us a little bit about this full-length that's coming up.
This is the beauty of having a long-standing relationship with an artist that you've helped mentor. And, Annabelle and I know each other now for close to 15 years. And, I will say this only because she says it. I was the first one to come to her and say, but you're Ochoa. So what does that mean to you? You're a Latina, right? And so she started investigating her culture. That was a little stifled because she was raised in Europe. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely through different pieces all the way up to Tiburones, which you will see, she's really taken on that part of her that is her Latinidad, as we say it, or her Latinness. And so it's not a surprise that we're here creating a work by a Latina about a Latina, which is Evita, the story, new music, new libretto, new everything from her perspective, because again, stories about women are told about men. Mm-hmm. And Evita is another one, just like West Side Story is about someone else. And so how do you reframe that and refresh that? And this is why we're doing this. I have to tell you, heads up, it's a beautiful work. I hope you'll get to see it at some point, but we are premiering it here at City Center April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing Arabesque, Tiburones, and 18 Plus One. It's a part of your company's 50th anniversary Wednesday evening. Eduardo Villaro, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich. It's been a pleasure.
Eduardo Villaro is the artistic director and CEO of Ballet Hispanico, celebrating its 50th anniversary with a tour presented by Corgus Productions tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus. For information about the event, go to corgus.org. Well, we're going to leave you with a little more music from Perez Prado and 18 Plus One. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher.